Oh, hi there. I'm Jason, the creator of the Army Showcase, and today we're going to show you how you can waste spray paint on this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield. Welcome to Season 4, Episode 11 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. And the first thing I want to mention today is hopefully I sound better. And I'm saying that because, well, I'm not wearing those usual crappy little microphones I've had on for the past 3 years. I went out, spent a decent chunk of money, and bought myself a nice professional broadcast quality microphone. So, well, granted, I haven't listened to the video yet, so I'm not sure if I actually do sound better. I'm just kind of assuming I do because based on what I'm seeing on my audio board and the fact that this microphone costs a lot more than the old ones, I'm sure as heck hoping it sounds better. In the very least, it's less noise coming through, and which means it's less annoying to you, and also it's less annoying to me when it comes time to edit, because editing out audio noise in the background is annoying and just frustrating and just wastes a lot of time. But enough of that. What we're really doing today was we're continuing a tradition from, I guess, yeah, it's been about 3 years now. It's about the third year we continue this tradition, which is about this time of the year, we go ahead and show you how to build some type of battlefield. Now, the past 2 years, I've done different types of terrains. I've done things like trees, mountains, grasslands, lakes, volcanic lava, wastelands, stuff like that. This year, we're lifting off the planet and going into space. So we've got three projects lined up for you right here. The first one's going to be the actual starfield itself. We're going to take a 3-foot by 4-foot display board and turn it into a real cool star field with lots of little stars that have variable brightness, variable size, things like that. The second project was kind of an idea I came up with today because I decided for some reason today would be a great day for me to learn how to do watercolor painting. I have no idea what I thought that was a good idea, but that's what I was thinking. So what we're going to do is show you how to build a planet. It's a simple process of just kind of teaching how to use watercolors to get a planet-like effect, and it kind of worked out all right. Like I said, it's my first time doing this, so hopefully we'll have fun together learning how to do watercolor painting. And the third and final project is a really simple, primarily a time filler thing to waste about a few minutes. We're going to show you how you can make asteroids. I'll give you a hint. They involve rocks, a base of some sort, and glue. So it literally takes about 3 minutes to build the asteroids. Just one little quick tip, helpful one there that can maybe help you out a little bit. Also, the great way to use up the lava rock from last year's build of the volcanic wastelands. So with that, enough of me talking for right now. I'll catch up with you again at the end of the show. Let's go ahead and dive right into the construction of the starfield. Now, off to my left over here is a starfield that we're going to build in just a moment, and it's painted on top of a tri-fold display board. These are the kind of things you would see kids using like in a science fair or a diorama-rama to show the results of whatever kind of crazy experiment they ran. And of course it's tri-fold because it opens up, which is nice for us because that makes it easy to store this thing away because it takes less space and it's smaller and easier to carry because of that. The particular one I'm running with is 4 feet by 3 feet. So you can go ahead and put two of these things together and make a nice 6-foot by 4-foot board to play on. And obviously, to make your life a lot easier, you want to choose one that has a background color of black because, well, space is black, more or less. And also, one other note, I use the cardboard tri-fold boards. There are ones made of foam core board, but those are a lot more expensive, like $15 versus around $5 for the cardboard ones. Now, the other items you're going to need, of course, everyone's favorite, duct tape. We've got a scrap piece of like plywood. This is about 3/8 of an inch thick or so. It doesn't really matter what type of plywood it is because you're going to do some hammering and nailing. So you want to make sure you've got some kind of scrap piece of plywood that you can get beat up and no one's going to care. We've got a handful of nails here. We want 3 or 4 nails with different diameters because we're going to use these nails to actually create a template for the stars. Of course, then a hammer. A pen. Something simple. White spray paint. You're going to kind of use a lot of that. It's not the most efficient thing, but whatever. You're going to have some kind of cardboard or tag board. The color doesn't really matter. I just got black here because that's kind of what I had laying around. But this is going to be just a template, so the color doesn't matter at all. And finally, just like some scrap newspaper or flyers or something like that that we're going to use to build, so I kind of extend out the template a little bit. So first things first, we're going to want to build the template I keep referring to, and what this is going to be is a piece of tag board with a whole bunch of little holes punched in it. So then you can take the spray paint and spray over it, and obviously the paint goes through the holes and makes the stars you see on the back of your space background. I probably should be wearing safety goggles, shouldn't I? Why don't you add safety goggles and also some medium to fine grit sandpaper to that list of items you're going to need. So now to make the template, first thing you want to do is take your scrap piece of plywood, just kind of set it down on your table so when you're doing some hammering and nailing here, it's not going to go into the table, it's going to go into this plywood. And then take your piece of tag board and put it on top of the plywood so that when you start nailing holes into this tag board, it's obviously that it's not going to go down into the table. I should mention the size of the tag board I'm using here. I'm using about 8.5 by 11. I think it's a little bit bigger. But that's about the size you need to work with. So look for a piece of tag board or cardboard that's around 8.5 inches by 11 inches. And if possible, just go ahead and use some kind of scrap paper that you, or scrap cardboard from like a food box or something if you want to be really efficient. I'm just using old tag board I had laying around. Step one is you actually want to trace out a kind of a large oval rectangle circle kind of object, doesn't really matter the exact shape, that is about 1 to 1.5 inches in from all four sides of the tag board. Because what you want to do is have a region around the tag board that has no like holes in it. So here we go, I'm just going to draw a nice big rectangle. Like I said, every edge of the rectangle is 1 to 1.5 inches in from its respective edge of the tag board. I hope you can see it all right there. But you can see it goes here, goes down like this, up like that, and around there. And it's about, like I said, 1 inch to 1.5 inches between the rectangle and the side of the tag board. Now, when it comes to actually hammering in nails into the tag board to make little holes for the star template, only put holes within this rectangle you just drew. The reason is when we go to take this newspaper, we're going to basically add a kind of a protective skirt around the edge, and it's going to tape on to this area that has no holes in it. So the area outside the rectangle is going to be covered up with duct tape and newspaper, so that's why I don't want to bother putting any holes in it. Okay, get your safety goggles on. Starting with one nail, just take your hammer and go, and just kind of punch a hole into the tag board. Let me hold it up here. You can see now, there's a little hole up there. You can see it kind of has to change a little bit as I move my finger around. And just maybe put 50 to 100 holes of each nail size in the tag board, like just like that. Keep doing this. There you go, you can see I finished up with the first nail size, and I kind of moved the tag board, you'll be able to see how it's also driven holes in it. And now repeat the process for each of the remaining sizes of nails you have. I've got only two more, because I found three sizes is probably good enough to get a good diversity of stars, because not only does the nail size determine the actual size of the hole, but also when we get to sand, using the sandpaper, that'll change the size a little bit, the angle you spray it at. There's a lot of little factors. So about three different sizes of holes is good enough to get a nice diversity of stars. Okay, let's get my safety goggles off here. And hold up the finished, completed Starfield template. You can see now there's lots of little holes in various sizes. Obviously the tag board here, and that's what's going to allow you to create the cool dot-like pattern you see in the star field. The last step you want to do to finish this stage of the template up, flip it over so the side you drew the rectangle on and, you know, the side you drilled, punched all the holes in is facing down. So now you'll notice that basically every single hole you punched with a nail has a little bit of paper sticking up around its ridge. We want to try to get rid of those as best as possible, and that's where the sandpaper comes in. Take those fine to medium grit sandpaper and just run over the entire template. And this is going to do one of two different things. One, it's either going to maybe close the holes back up a little bit, getting even more variations in the size of the stars, or it's going to rip them open and make them a little bit bigger. So either way, you're going to get even more variability to your star size in your template. hold up the back side here, you can see I've sanded down all the edges. I guess you probably can't see that too well because it's kind of small and detailed and low quality video. But regardless, if I hold it on the other side, you can see there's still lots of little holes there where the white paint can go through. And then let me show you why we're going to do the next step, which is we're going to build a skirt around this template. So let me show you what I've got here, which is my first attempt at this, and unfortunately it kind of failed. Because what you're going to notice as I open this up, you're going to see all the little stars. Whoops, sorry for my spray paint. But you're also going to see large rectangles throughout the board. And what happened is, if you use the template just as you have it, where it's about an 8.5 inch by 11 sheet, what's going to happen when you spray the spray paint, you know, a lot of it's going to go either on the template or through the template to the board to make the stars, but enough of the spray paint just kind of flows off to the side of the template rectangle that it actually makes little rectangle shapes around where you're spray painting, and that's obviously not what you want, and it looks pretty crappy. So that's why we're doing this next step, which is to add a gigantic newspaper-like skirt around the edge of the template. So therefore, you get a large enough area that as the spray paint kind of flows out to the sides, it won't leave those giant ugly rectangle things. Now we're going to build this skirt that's going to go around the outside of the template, and you want to build it in such a way then you're pretty much going to add about 12 to 15 inches of material to each side of the template. So here, for example, on the right side of the template, we're going to add newspaper to extend it out about 15 inches. That should give you enough area that the diffuse particles from the spray paint will actually just kind of drift off and stop on the newspaper instead of going on to the board and creating that weird rectangle effect I showed you just a little bit ago. Now there's actually a very specific way you want to attach the newspaper on to the template. And what you want to do is whenever you attach another sheet of newspaper on, you want to make sure that the piece of newspaper you're attaching on goes under the current layer. So for example, here you can see I've got my template is on top, the newspaper is below the template. And the reason for that is as paint particles flow out from the center of the template, this way the paint particles can't accidentally slip under the newspaper and kind of bypass the whole effect of having this whole extra skirt on in the first place. So once you've got the newspaper where you want it, take some duct tape and tape that piece of newspaper down. Now go ahead and continue this process again and again until you've extended each of the sides of the template by about 12 to 15 inches. Well, there we go. A whole bunch of newspaper and duct tape later. You got your template done with a giant skirt on. Let me hold this thing up and show you just how big and unwieldy and ungainly it really is. I'm not going to lie, it is kind of messy to work with. But it's kind of required to avoid that crazy rectangle thing you saw with my first test. So we're going to head outside and start spray painting it and build your star field from there. Now that I've moved outside, we're going to go ahead and start painting up the star field using the spray paint. Now, a few quick notes before we begin the actual painting process. Once you've gone outside, you're going to notice a cool, mysterious, and powerful force called the wind. Now, the wind in regard to this project is going to wreak havoc in two different ways. One, with your template and the fact that you've got probably several square feet of newspaper attached around it makes the template one heck of a wind sail, meaning the wind's going to move it really easily, very quickly, very fast. So there's two ways you can handle this. One, don't go outside when it's windy. Now, that's not always the most opportune thing. The other option would be then to use some of those weights. Like, for example, right now I've got golf balls holding down the corners of the template. So, yes, use some kind of weights to hold the template down. Now, the other thing regarding the wind is actually the spray paint itself. Obviously, wind's going to cause the spray paint to go all sorts of crazy different ways. So just keep that in mind when you're using it. And the best way you can avoid that is just try to pick a time when there's a little wind. That's really your best option at this point. So here's the process we're going to take. We'll take the actual middle of the template part there, which has all little star cutout points on it. Starting in one corner of the board, we'll put it there and run the spray paint over it. Then, once you run the spray paint over it, we'll shift the whole template down maybe 6-10 inches in one direction, rotate it a little bit to get a little bit of variety in where the stars are placed, and repeat the process with the spray paint. And keep going over, just keep doing that again and again and again
until we've covered the entire board.
So, let's run through this one time quickly. I'm grabbing my template here. We're moving it over to the, I guess it'd be the, we'll call it the upper left corner of the board. Let's get a spray pan out and shake it. And run the spray paint in a basically a very well-defined, repeatable pattern over all the little holes where the, of your star cutout template thing you're running with. So I'll go 1, 2. There we go. Let's pick this thing up, move it a few inches in one direction. Make sure the weights stay on. Maybe rotate it a little bit if you want, and repeat the process. And now just keep doing this again and again and again until the entire board is covered. Case in point about the wind. Alright, well, that's looking pretty good. Except, well, what you're going to notice probably after your first pass, there's probably going to be a few spots you missed with no stars at all. So go ahead and move the template back to those regions and make a few more passes over to the template with the spray paint. And I'll kind of fill in the gaps. It should be all done after that. But once you've got all the gaps filled in, we can call this part of the build done. So let's head back inside and show you how to build a planet. For project 2 today, I'm going to try to build a planet, or in this case, I'm going to go for an icy moon, kind of like the moon Europa that orbits Jupiter. So what you're going to need here is, first of all, a half a sphere of styrofoam. You can get these things for a few dollars from a hobby or craft store. You're probably going to find them in like the plant section or the floral arrangement section, because these types of shapes are used to stick plastic flowers in to make flower arrangements. So like I said, find them in the floral arrangement section. I've got, in this case, an old t-shirt, but basically the dirty cloth you can put down for painting purposes to keep the paint off the table. I've got the plywood from the star field, which I don't know why I still have it here, so let's move that out of the way. We've got white gesso. Of course, this is some of my favorite material of all time. A paintbrush right now. Right now, this is the basic paintbrush, but the gesso one will probably get a few more detailed brushes out later. And last, I got an introductory kit to watercolor. It's $9 from Michaels. We'll see how this works. I've never actually done watercolors before, but it'll be a fun experiment to kind of learn along with you guys. And one funny little observation I noticed, there's a color in here called ultramarine, and ironically, it's a deep blue color. So, now we know where Games Workshop got the ultramarines from and why they have a deep blue color to them. Like I said, this is just a basic introductory kit to watercolors. This particular one's manufactured by Reeves, and it costs you about $9 for 12 different tubes of watercolor. Let's set that all off the side. First thing we're going to start with is coating the styrofoam ball with the white gesso. And of course we do this because it's tough to paint directly onto styrofoam or foam-like materials. Fortunately, the gesso is a special type of paint which sticks really well to porous surfaces like the styrofoam. So we're going to cover this thing in the gesso, therefore creating basically a primer that you can paint the watercolor or any other kind of paints onto it. And one observation about the half styrofoam ball I'm using is I've had this thing for a long time. It was actually left over from when I built that drop ship that I never really showed you guys how to build, but it showed up in one episode. And as a result, it's been in a box. It's got a lot of scrapes and scars into it. I'm actually going to work that into the design of the moon. I'm going to make these scrapes and scars be like cracks in the ice and or like asteroid impacts or something like that to kind of give the moon a bit of a textured surface. So, first step, like I said, let's crack open the gesso. Ow, sweet, merciful crap. Ooh, that was tied shut, apparently. Let's shake it up. And then crack it open. There we go. And just put a little bit of gesso on the top of the styrofoam circle, and then using your paintbrush, just give the half styrofoam sphere here a nice coating in white gesso. One thing that's already annoying me about this particular type of styrofoam I'm using, it's very crumbly. So perhaps you may want to consider trying to find a different type of styrofoam circle than this kind of green crumbly stuff I'm using right now. It's working, but I can tell you there's definitely a lot of little bits of like green stuff kind of flaking off. Just a random note I just discovered here. You probably want to actually paint from the bottom up. Therefore, you can use your hands to hold this thing steady as you're painting the bottom. And then when you get to the top, you won't really need to hold it steady. Well, this is an interesting thing I just discovered, so keep that in mind when you're painting this thing up. I've got the white gesso applied to the half styrofoam ball. I'm actually going to let it dry here, and when I come back, I'm going to apply a second layer of the gesso. Now, the reason I'm going to do that is the first layer should help hold on a lot of that green, crumbly crap that's having trouble falling off, and therefore, once it's dry and that's all held in place, I can go apply a second layer, kind of fill in some of the kind of lightly covered areas so I can get a better base coat for when I use the watercolor. So quick update to where we're at right now. After the first layer of white gesso dried on the sphere that has to be really used for the planet, I applied a second layer, just, you know, give it more, better covering, and I let that one dry. Now, while those were drying, I went off to a website called watercolorpainting.com and took a look at some of their tutorials and gave me a crash course on how to actually use watercolors. So once again, that's watercolorpainting.com. They have a whole bunch of tutorials on actually how you do various techniques with watercolors, some basic to advanced. I'll put that link in the show notes for you. So first thing I'm going to do, like I said, I'm trying to create a, I guess in this case, a smaller moon-like planet similar to what Europa is. I guess Europa is one of the moons of Jupiter, and it is an icy world. It's basically got covered in water ice with some cracks and fractures in it and possibly a liquid ocean underneath it. So what I'm going to do using the watercolors is take a little bit of the ultramarine blue, and I want to give this whole planet a bit of a bluish tint. So I'm going to mix, I'm just going to take some of the ultramarine blue, obviously I'm going to mix in some water to kind of give it a very waterish color, because that's kind of how watercolor paints work. And just give this whole thing a bit of a bluish tint. In this case, it looks almost purplish. Then we'll see what happens. And starting at the very top of the planet and kind of working down and around, just coat the planet in the watercolor paint. And try to go with smooth, even strokes with just maybe a little bit of overlap. So the first layer on this planet is done, and I'm going to let it sit and dry before I try to do another layer. And the reason I chose watercolors is it's very easy to get varying intensities. If you look closely at the planet here, you're going to see that some areas are kind of darkish blue, some areas are light blue, some areas still show mostly white from underneath it. And that's one of the cool things about watercolors. It's very easy to control the intensity at different locations to give this kind of blotchy transitional look effect. Because if you ever actually look at a planet from space, you'll notice that it's very rarely is it a uniform color. Look at Venus, look at Jupiter, you've got multiple bands of colors and clouds and things going on. That's the effect I'm trying to get here. So like I said, let this first layer dry. We'll come back and put the second layer on in a little bit. Layer one is done and dried, and it's got the nice little bluish tint to it. The second layer I'm going to put on here is actually create a bit of a polar ice cap effect. Well, not really ice cap, it's going to be green. But still, the end result is I'm going to create a bit of a polar region up here at the top of the planet. It's going to be a bit of a greenish-blue tint. So therefore, I'm getting out two more colors. We're actually not ultramarine blue. I want to use phthalo blue. There we are. And Viridian hue. It's a bit of a kind of a greenish blue mixture. Let's Strap a little bit of the green stuff on one side of my palette, which, by the way, for the palette, I'm actually using a Privateer Press War Machine plastic thing that comes inside of the various figure boxes, so making good use of old resources. And I'll mix them together. There we go. Get a nice little bluish-green color there. And let's put it just in the top of the planet and going down and around. And you want to make it a bit of irregular shape. I mean, assuming if you want to take this approach. Oh, boy, that's not good. And that'll create a nice little cool-looking polar effect. So it's like a weird polar thing. And I got a problem going on here, I just discovered. There's paint running down the sides of the planet right now. Oh, boy. That's not... Nothing ever turns out perfectly. The idea is there, though. But now you can see I've got a nice bluish-green polar cap-like thing. And we're going to let that dry, and we'll come back and do the final step, which is to paint the crevices and the ice nice and dark, like there's little cracks or, you know, something's going on down there. So the second layer of paint on this planet is dried and done. I'm going to go ahead and add the third layer. For me, this will be the third and final layer, but of course, for your planet, if you want to add more effects, like more clouds, more ice, and go crazy, you know, add as many layers as you want. Now, as I mentioned, this is an old piece of styrofoam that I've been sitting in a box for a while, so there's lots of nicks and kind of scrapes and scratches here and there. So I'm going to use that to my advantage in making this planet look even more realistic, more damaged. So we want to take out the phthalo blue, and also get some ivory black here, or whatever type of black comes in your watercolor kit. And we're going to mix those two together to obviously get a dark black color. A little bit of phthalo blue there. Phthalo blue, however you pronounce it. And then just a little tiny bit of black. And now this time, instead of using the big 1-inch brush I have been using, I'm going to actually pulling out some of my older hobby painting brushes. And because I want to get a nice, very thin, very narrow brush, because obviously I'm going to be going into little cracks and crevices and things. Oh boy, that's not good. That's going to happen a little bit. So using this color, just go into all the little cracks and crevices and just kind of add that in there. And just kind of drop it in there. And this is going to add little, as I mentioned, dark spots on the surface of the Well, let's call the third layer done. I mean, I could probably spend more time adding more details, adding more highlights, and try to figure this whole thing out. But like I said, this is the first time I've really worked with watercolor colors. So hopefully you had a fun time along with me learning how to paint with these things, and you'll at least get some basic shapes down. Nothing too fancy, some basic shapes. But let's go ahead and put our paints aside, and we'll get out the stuff we need to build asteroids. For our final project of the day, we're going to be building an asteroid field, or individual asteroids, depending on how you want to do it. In all honesty, though, in a quick science lesson, I don't think the densely packed asteroid fields you often see in science fiction movies can actually exist. Gravity probably wouldn't allow it, because gravity would kind of pull all the little asteroids together into one giant clump, and therefore there's no longer a dense asteroid field. But regardless, that's a totally separate topic. It's your world, your universe, do whatever you want. So let's run through what we're going to be using here today. First of all, I've got this weird foam stuff. It's called Creatology Fun Foam or something like that. I'll put a link in the show notes to the place where you can buy it. But it's by Creatology, the company that makes it. And it's a very thin foam. It's about an eighth of an inch thick at most. You can get different thicknesses if I got a really thin one. So this gives it a nice kind of sturdy but also flexible base, and something you can, when you put down on the field, that won't kind of stick up too much, you know, beyond the actual space field and won't mess with the miniatures or tokens, whatever you're using too much. Next up, pen. Nothing fancy there. Scissors. Some kind of token shape to trace out the tokens. This is actually a game card for my game I'm making. And finally, a hot glue gun for gluing down the asteroids. Oh, and I should mention what the asteroids are made of. Lava rocks! Remember about the same time last year in episode 11 and 12 of the Tabletop Battlefield from season 3, I have built Lava Field, who took these lava rocks and crushed them all up. And now I've just got a few more of these that are actually left over from last year, because you buy them like a 50-pound bag, I need like 2 pounds of them. But the end result is, yeah, these are just lava rocks. There are landscaping items you can buy at like major home improvement stores. We'll sell them in giant bags. They're really cheap. They get, like I said, things like $3 or $4 for, I don't know, like a 50-pound bag or something. But when choosing the ones you want to use for the asteroids, look for ones that have nice, sizable, flat bottoms. Therefore, the flat bottoms will be good to actually glue down to the tokens or whatever you're going to glue down to. So step one is to decide just how big of an area the asteroid's going to occupy. Generally in games, depending on whatever game you're playing, the asteroids aren't usually by the weird irregular shape. They have some kind of region they influence. Because I'm actually making these for the tabletop game I'm going to be releasing not too far in the future. My area of influence is the size of a normal game card, just to make your life easier. But, you know, some games may use circles, maybe some games use hexagon, whatever it is. So using your pen, trace out several token sizes for the asteroids on the Creatology foam. Here, since I have 6 asteroids, I'm going to be tracing out 6 tokens. There we go. Hold up the sheet here. You can see now I've got 6 tokens that I've drawn on here. It's already getting, foam's already getting dirty. But yeah. Now if you look here, it's kind of difficult to see from the camera angle, but there are 6 tokens traced out. The lines are kind of pressed into the foam. Take your scissors and let's cut them out. So here are my 6 asteroid tokens I'm going to actually glue the asteroids down to. And one thing you might want to do is kind of an optional step. You may want to take like a Sharpie or some kind of like a white paint, some kind of bright color, you know, permanent marker paint, something, and trace the outlines of the counter sheet. That'll make it a little bit easier to tell kind of where the boundary of the asteroid begins and where it ends. Now, when you're ready to glue the asteroids down to their various bases, what you're going to want to do is pick an asteroid and find the flattest side that it has. Because obviously the flattest side is the one you want to glue down to the base in order to get the maximum amount of area from the asteroid to be sticking to the base, blah, 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 basic math like that. Okay, so take the flattest area and just do a pretty good job of just completely covering it in hot glue. There's no real reason to hold back at this point. Stick it down, let it go, and go asteroid to asteroid, repeating that process. Just let them sit for a few minutes, and now you've got a perfectly good set of asteroid tokens to use in your game. Now, it probably should go without saying, but I will mention it anyway, if you want to, before gluing them down, you can go ahead and paint up the lava rocks some other way. Obviously, to represent asteroids of different mineral contents, you know, stuff like that. Hey, go creative if you want to. I chose not to do that for simplicity's sake, but like I said, that's always a perfectly valid option. It's your universe. Make it look like how you want it to look. Well, there you go. That's all the projects. Hopefully, you can build yourself a really cool space battlefield for games like, say, Battlefleet Gothic, Babylon 5, A Call to Arms, Firestorm Armada, or a bit of shameless self-promotion on my part here, the game I'm working on that I should be releasing hopefully within the next couple months. So I'll talk more about that in probably a future episode of the show. So with that, thanks for watching. Let's call this one done. If you have any questions or comments, send them to me at jason@rockosoftware.com. That's rockosoftware.com. Of course, Twitter at @TT_Battlefield. And Steam, if you want to play some Left 4 Dead or Dawn of War 2, or Dawn of War 2 with the Chaos Rising expansion pack, that would be Rocco Robotics, all one word. So I'll tell you a little bit about what we got coming up for the rest of the year here, at least the next couple of months anyway. Some of the big announcements, of course, are the release of the new HeroClix starter set. This will be the 2010 Rules Edition that the new WizKids, which is not the old WizKids, will be releasing June 12th. So I can assure you we will be getting a copy of that in as soon as possible. Whoops, sorry about that. We'll be getting a copy of that in as soon as possible and doing a full review of that as we do in the past. Also, in July, Warhammer Fantasy. Well, yeah, Warhammer Fantasy. But Games Workshop is releasing, the new edition of Warhammer Fantasy Battles. It's the 8th edition of the game. So, I'm gonna have to get some people together. We'll talk about the changes there. And if possible, hopefully GW is having one of the little preview weekends like they did with the 5th edition of 40K. And if so, I'll try to be there at the local GW store trying the game out. Beyond that, you know, we'll see how things go. So once again, I'm Jason. Thanks for watching. Have a good night, and we'll see you again in about 2 weeks on the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.